The Enterprise glides through a dark, star-flecked ocean of space. On the bridge, Kirk and Spock watch the forward viewscreen. Lieutenant Hadley is navigating. Lieutenant Spinelli is at the helm.
Coming up on it fast, sir.
There's nothing unusual visible on the forward viewscreen.
Are you certain of your sensory?
Definitely a space vessel of some type.
Origin?
Unknown. Could hardly be an Earth ship. There have been no flights into this sector for years.
I'm picking up a signal, sir. Captain, that's the old Morse code call signal.
Thank you, Lieutenant.
CQ? CQ?
We're reading it, Lieutenant. I thought you said it couldn't possibly be an Earth vessel.
I understand why it always gives you pleasure to see me proven wrong.
An emotional Earth weakness of mine. There it is.
A long, gray ship appears on the screen.
An old Earth vessel, similar to the DY-500 class.
Much older. DY-100 class, to be exact.
The Enterprise edges closer to the old ship.
Captain, the last such vessel was built centuries ago, back in the 1990s.
Then it's a derelict. Its signal left on automatic.
Or an old Earth ship being used by aliens.
Weapon status.
Reflector shields on maximum. Phaser's manned, sir.
Bioscanners report.
Life science bioscanners are picking up heartbeats from over there. Can't be human, though. They're too faint and average. Only 4 beats per minute.
Sensor reading, Captain. Some sort of equipment functioning on that vessel.
All decks go to full alert.
The bridge swarms with crew hurrying calmly to their posts. The Enterprise dwarfs the ancient ship as it draws up alongside.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its 5-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Star Trek, created by Gene Roddenberry. Starring William Shatner, also starring Leonard Nimoy as Mr. Spock. Space Seed.
Captain's log, stardate 3141.9. A full hour has elapsed since interception of the strange vessel. Our presence alongside is still being completely ignored. Although our sensors continue to show signs of equipment and life aboard, there's been no indication of danger to us.
Weapons Department, maintain battle stations. All of the decks, stand by alert.
All decks acknowledging, sir.
Continuing to pick up some form of heart action over there. Very faint, very slow. Seems to be coming from about 60 or 70 bodies, as near as I can make out.
Alien bodies, Bill?
Could be. There's no sign of breathing or any other form of respiration. Hull surface is pitted with meteor scars. However, scanners make out a name. SS Botany Bay.
Then you can check the registry.
No such vessel listed. Records of that period are fragmentary, however. The mid-1990s was the era of your last so-called World War. The eugenics wars. Of course. Your attempt to improve the race through selective breeding.
Oh, now, wait a minute. Not our attempt, Mr. Spock. A group of ambitious scientists. I'm sure you know the type. Devoted to logic. Completely unemotional.
Doctor, I would be pleased.
All right, gentlemen, as you were. Rig for tractor beam helm. Lock onto that vessel.
Rigging for tractor beam, sir.
Bridge is yours, Mr. Spock. Care to join the landing party, Doctor?
Well, if you're actually giving me a choice,
I'm not.
Kirk strides away.
Oh, I'll need somebody familiar with the late 20th century Earth. Here's a chance for that historian to do something for a change. What's her name? McGivers?
Lieutenant McGivers.
The quarters of a red-headed crew member are cluttered with paintings and sculptures.
Attention. The following personnel report to transporter room. Engineering Officer Scott, Lieutenant McGivers. Acknowledge.
The redhead goes to her intercom.
McGivers, on my way.
She grabs some equipment and walks out. Scotty is checking readings in the transporter room.
Oh, it looks like that ship is expecting us. We read heat coming on, complete oxygen atmosphere.
Very interesting.
You ready, Bones?
No. Signed aboard this ship to practice medicine, not to have my atoms scattered back and forth across space by this gadget.
You're an old-fashioned boy, McCoy.
Where's that Astoria? Well, come on, Lieutenant.
MacGyver, sir.
She joins Kirk, McCoy, and Scotty.
Energize.
On board the dimly lit SS Botany Bay, a rows of people asleep in glass, sealed, coffin-sized bunks. Both men and women are dressed in skimpy thongs, covered by tight, gold netting bodysuits. The Enterprise party beams in, and Scotty heads straight for a bank of machinery.
Scotty? Definitely Earth-type mechanism, sir. 20th century vessel. Old-type atomic power. Bulky, solid. I think they used to call them transistor units. I'd love to tear this baby apart.
Captain, it's a sleeper ship.
Suspended animation?
Uh-huh. I've seen old photographs of this. Necessary because of the time involved in space travel until about the year 2018. It took years just to travel from one planet to another.
Is it possible they're still alive? After centuries of travel.
Theoretically possible. I've never heard of it being tested for this long a period.
The lights brighten.
What a handsome group of people.
Jim, we have a new reading. The lights must have triggered some mechanism.
Captain, look here.
They peer into a sealed bunk.
Scotty.
Beats me what's happening.
We've triggered something, all right. Heartbeat's increasing. It's now passing 8 beats per minute. There's some signs of respiration beginning.
This one was probably programmed to be triggered first.
Could he be the leader?
MacGyver's gazes at the sleeping man.
The leader? Lieutenant?
Yes, sir. The leader was often set to revive first. This would allow him to decide whether the conditions warranted revival of the others.
Heartbeat now approaching 40 per minute. The respiration pattern is firming up.
From the northern India area, I'd guess. Probably a Sikh. They're the most fantastic warriors.
Heartbeat now 52 and increasing.
The others?
There's no change, and they're all mixed types. Western, mid-European, Latin, Oriental.
A man from the 20th century coming alive.
Maybe. Heartbeat dropping.
Circuit shortening. Probably some dust.
Heartbeat now 30, dropping fast. The heart flutter. He's dying.
Do something, Captain.
Can we? Take an hour to figure it out. What happens if we get him out of there?
He'll die in seconds if we don't.
The handsome sleeping man with long jet black hair starts to convulse. Kirk breaks the glass panel of the bunk with the handle of his phaser and reaches inside. MacGyver's looks on, not taking her eyes off the unconscious 20th century man. Kirk and Scotty ease down the broken glass panel, and a table glides out with the man on it. His chest rises and falls rapidly as he snatches for breath. MacGyver's looks on anxiously as the man opens his eyes and mouths words. Kirk leans in close and puts his ear to the man's mouth.
How long have you been sleeping? 2 centuries, we estimate. Landing party of Enterprise, come in.
Go ahead, boarding party, we read you.
Lock in on Dr. McCoy's beam. He's transporting back with a casualty we discovered here.
Magnificent.
Captain's log supplemental. Alongside the SS Botany Bay for 10 hours now. A boarding party of engineering and medical specialists are now completing their examination of the mysterious vessel. Attempts to revive other sleepers await our success or failure with the casualty already beamed over. Dr. McCoy is frankly amazed at his physical and recuperative power.
On the bridge.
Kirk to boarding party.
Scott here.
Scotty. Any records, log books of any kind?
Negative, Captain. It appears they were in suspended animation when the ship took off.
How many alive?
12 units have malfunctioned, leaving 72 still operating. 30 of those are women.
Kirk out.
Spock is at his console.
72, alive. Group of people dating back to the 1990s. Discovery of some importance, Mr. Spock. There are a great many unanswered questions about those years.
A strange, violent period in your history. I find no record whatsoever of an SS Botany Bay. Captain, the DY-100 class vessel was designed for interplanetary travel only. With simple nuclear-powered engines, star travel was considered impractical at that time. It was 10,000 to 1 against their making it to another star system. And why no record of the trip?
Botany Bay. That was the name of a penal colony on the shores of Australia, wasn't it? They took that name for their vessel.
If you're suggesting this was a penal deportation vessel, you've arrived at a totally illogical conclusion.
Oh?
Your Earth was on the verge of a dark ages. Whole populations were being bombed out of existence. A group of criminals could have been dealt with far more efficiently than wasting one of their most advanced spaceships.
Yes. So much for my theory. I'm still waiting to hear yours.
Even a theory requires some facts, Captain. So far, I have none.
And that irritates you, Mr. Spock?
Irritation?
Yeah.
I'm not capable of that emotion.
My apologies, Mr. Spock. You suspect some danger in them.
Insufficient facts always invites danger, Captain.
Well, I better get some facts. Rig for towing.
Aye, aye, sir.
Make course for Starbase 12.
Aye, sir.
In sickbay, the red light on the biomonitor screen indicating a heartbeat flashes steadily. McCoy turns from the screen to a nurse.
That'll be all.
He takes a small cylindrical sensor from her and moves it over the chest of the man they found on the Botany Bay. Kirk comes in.
Well, you'll live.
My compliments.
Oh, no, I'm good, but not that good. There's something inside this man that refuses to accept death. Now look at that. Even as he is now, his heart valve action is twice the power of yours or mine. Lung efficiency, 50% better.
An improved breed of human. That's what the eugenics war was all about.
I'd estimate he could lift us both with one arm. Be interesting to see if his brain matches his body.
Doctor, will he live?
It appears he will, Lieutenant.
McCoy leaves and a smile plays on MacGyver's lips. Kirk sweeps out.
I'd like to talk to you.
MacGyver follows him.
If I were to rate your performance as a member of the landing party today,
I know, sir, I'm sorry.
Lieutenant, at any one time, the safety of this entire vessel might depend on the performance of a single crewman aboard. And the fact that you find a man strangely compelling to you personally.
Not personally, Captain, professionally. My profession is historian, and I ought to find a specimen from the past alive. I mean, the sheer delight of examining his mind.
And men were more adventuresome then. Bolder, more colorful.
Yes, sir, I think they were.
Good. If I can have honesty, it's easier to overlook mistakes. That's all.
Yes, sir.
She leaves. McCoy has been watching.
It's a pity you wasted your life on command, Jim. You'd have made a fair psychologist.
Fair?
With a smug smile, Kirk leaves. Sitting at his desk, McCoy smiles to himself and returns to his notes. In the adjoining room, the man from the Botany Bay wakes up and slowly lifts his head. He puts his hand over his eyes, as if he has a blinding headache. Wearing an open, sleeveless tunic that shows off his muscular but not bulky frame, he sits on the edge of his bed and stretches his arms. He puts his hands together and breathes deeply in a yoga-style movement. McCoy switches on his intercom.
Sick beta lab. Anything new on those bios?
They all came out fine, Doctor.
Good, McCoy out.
The man sees some antique surgical tools mounted on the wall. McCoy sits at his desk and ponders. The man grabs a black-handled surgical knife from the display. McCoy goes through to the sick bay from his adjoining office. The man is back in bed with his eyes closed. McCoy surveys the biomonitor screen above the bed, then lifts his patient's eyelid. The man springs up suddenly like a striking snake, grabs McCoy's throat, and threatens him with the knife.
Well, either choke me or cut my throat. Make up your mind.
English. I thought I dreamed hearing it. Where am I?
You're it.
The man tightens his grip and glowers with hypnotic brown eyes.
You're in bed, holding a knife at your doctor's throat.
Answer my question.
It would be most effective if you would cut the carotid artery just under the left ear.
The man's eyes burn. McCoy looks calm despite the pressure applied to his throat. The man lets go, but keeps hold of the knife.
I'm like a brave man.
I was simply trying to avoid an argument.
McCoy takes the knife.
You're aboard the United Spaceship Enterprise. Your vessel is in tow.
I remember a voice. Did I hear it say? I had been sleeping for 2 centuries.
That is correct.
Where is your captain? I have many questions.
The man settles back in his bed with an imperious expression. McCoy goes to a wall-mounted intercom.
Bridge.
I have a patient here with many questions, Captain.
On my way.
A short time later, Kirk comes in.
James Kirk, commanding the Starship Enterprise.
I see.
And your name?
I have a few questions first. What is your heading?
Our heading is Starbase 12, a planet in the Gamma 400 star system. Our command base in this sector. Is that of any use to you?
And, my people?
72 of your life support canisters are still functioning.
The frown recedes from the man's face. Sitting up in bed, he leans his head back.
You will revive them.
As soon as we reach Starbase 12.
I see.
And now?
Khan is my name.
Khan, nothing else?
Khan.
What was the exact date of your liftoff? We know it was sometime in the early 1990s, but...
I find myself growing fatigued, Doctor. May we continue this questioning at some other time?
The facts I need, Mr. Khan, will take very little time. For example, the nature of your expedition...
Jim, a little later might be better.
Captain, I wonder if I could have something to read during my convalescence. I was once an engineer of sorts. I would be most interested in studying the technical manuals on your vessel.
Yes, I understand. You have 200 years of catching up to do.
Precisely.
They're available to any patient on the viewing screen. Dr. McCoy will show you how to tie into the library tapes.
Thank you, Captain. You're very cooperative.
Giving the regal Khan a mildly quizzical look, Kirk glances at McCoy's somber face, then leaves. McCoy shows Khan the controls on the extendable arm that holds the viewing screen. Kirk comes up to Spock on the bridge.
This Khan is not what I expected of a 20th century man.
I note he's making considerable use of our technical library.
Common courtesy, Mr. Spock. He's going to spend the rest of his days in our time. It's only decent to help him catch up. Would you estimate him to be a product of selected breeding?
There is that possibility, Captain. His age would be correct. In 1993, a group of these young supermen did seize power simultaneously in over 40 nations.
Well, they were hardly supermen. They were aggressive, arrogant. They began to battle among themselves.
Because the scientists overlooked one fact. Superior ability breeds superior ambition.
Interesting, if true. They created a group of Alexanders, Napoleons.
I've collected some names and made some counts.
By my estimate, there were some 80 or 90 of these young supermen unaccounted for when they were finally defeated.
Spock hands Kirk a report pad.
That fact isn't in the history texts.
Would you reveal to war-weary populations that some 80 Napoleons might still be alive?
Kirk looks gravely at Spock. In sickbay, MacGyver's comes up to Khan's bedside.
Ship's historian, Lieutenant...
Marla MacGyver's.
Yes.
I am told you participated in my rebirth.
In a small way.
I've been reading up on starships, but they have one luxury not mentioned in the manuals.
I don't understand.
He holds her with his eyes.
A beautiful woman. My name is Khan. Please sit and entertain me.
I'd like some historical information about your ship, its purpose, and...
And why do you wear your hair in such an uncomplimentary fashion?
It's comfortable.
But it's not attractive.
Khan slides off the mattress and sidles up to MacGyver's, who's perched on the edge of the neighboring bed. He picks at one of the grips pinning up her hair. Guiding her over to a mirror, he stands behind her, letting more of her hair down.
There. Soft. Natural. Simple.
Mr. Khan, I'm here on business.
You find no pleasure here?
My interest is scientific. Men of... that is, the world of the past. I'm sure you understand, actually talk to a man of your century.
There. Simple. Soft. Please remember.
Perhaps some other time, when you feel more like talking about the past.
He grabs her arm.
I'm glad you came.
She gazes at him, doe-eyed. She looks rapt. Later in the briefing room, the table is being set for a banquet. McCoy comes in, wearing his dress tunic.
Very impressive. Are we expecting a fleet admiral for dinner?
Lieutenant MacGyver's idea to welcome Khan to our century. Just how strongly is she attracted to him?
Well, there aren't any regulations against romance, Jim.
My curiosity is official, not personal, Bones.
Well, he has magnetism. Almost electric, you felt it. And it could overpower MacGyver's with her preoccupation with the past.
Thank you.
A crewman shows Khan into MacGyver's quarters.
I hoped you might guide me to our dinner engagement.
He spots a sketch.
Very good. Fine technique.
The gladiator named Flavius, he once...
And you've rearranged your hair for me. Excellent.
He caresses her flowing locks, then strides towards a group of paintings.
All bold men from the past. Richard, Leif Erikson, Napoleon. A hobby of yours, such men?
Dressed in a long golden coat, his black hair tied back, he uncovers a half-completed painting. It's him. Wearing a turban, MacGyver's is rooted to the spot.
I am honored. Thank you. But I caution you. Such men dare take what they want.
He lifts up her chin with his index finger and plants a kiss on her lips, holds her by the shoulders and pulls her close. She slowly wraps her arms around him and runs her hands up his back. They kiss passionately. Later, Kirk is sitting at the head of the table as two yeomen serve drinks.
Forgive my curiosity, Mr. Khan, but my officers are anxious to know more about your extraordinary journey.
And how you managed to keep it out of the history books.
Adventure, Captain, adventure. There was little else left on Earth.
There was the war to end tyranny. Many considered that a noble effort.
Tyranny, sir? Or an attempt to unify humanity?
Unify, sir? Like a team of animals under one whip.
Khan looks taken aback.
I know something of those years, remember? It was a time of great dreams, of great aspiration.
Under dozens of petty dictatorships.
One man would have ruled eventually. As Rome under Caesar, think of its accomplishments.
Khan narrows his eyes. Kirk looks at him somberly.
Then your sympathies were with...
You are an excellent tactician, Captain. You let your second in command attack while you sit and watch for weakness.
You have a tendency to express ideas in military terms, Mr. Khan.
Khan, seated between MacGyver's and Kirk, smiles.
This is a social occasion.
It has been said that social occasions are only warfare concealed. Many prefer it more honest, more open.
You fled. Why? Were you afraid?
I've never been afraid.
But you left at the very time mankind needed courage.
We offered the world order.
We.
Khan's eyes narrow. Everyone round the table looks at him. He smiles and nods.
Excellent. Excellent.
With them all looking at him gravely, Khan puts his glass down.
But if you will excuse me, gentlemen and ladies, I grow fatigued again. With your permission, Captain, I will return to my quarters.
Kirk stands up, and Khan, his jet-black shoulder-length hair tied back in a ponytail, leaves. Kirk watches him go impassively. Later, Khan looks agitated as he paces his quarters with his arms crossed behind his back, like a sea captain on the deck of his ship. MacGyver's comes in.
I wanted to apologize. They had no right to treat you that way.
Quite understandable, since I'm something of a mystery to them.
You're no mystery to me. I know exactly who you are.
He looks at her warily.
Do you?
Mm-hmm. Leif Erikson, Richard the Lionhearted, Napoleon. I don't know if you're going to like living in our time.
Then I'll have to remold it to my liking.
Please don't.
Go. Or stay, but do it because it is what you wish to do.
He looks at her impatiently. She stands by the door, transfixed, like a rabbit in a car's headlights.
Well?
I'll stay a little longer.
How many minutes do you graciously offer?
I only meant...
This grows tiresome. You must now ask to stay.
I'd like to stay. Please.
He turns to her with a condescending smile and holds out his hand. MacGyver steps forward, arm outstretched. Gently, he takes her hand and starts to squeeze it. She slowly falls to her knees with a pleading expression as he squeezes harder and harder.
Open your heart. Will you open your heart?
Yes.
I intend to take this ship. Do you agree?
Oh, please don't ask me to...
I need your help.
You won't harm anyone.
Now you question me.
No.
Will you assist me?
Oh, please, Khan, don't ask
me. Leave me, then. Go, I say.
She looks up at him meekly, her eyes filled with tears.
No. I promise. I'll do anything you ask.
He turns to her, and his look of disdain changes to a cruel smile. She avoids his withering gaze, looking down tearfully.
Name? Khan, as we know him today.
In the briefing room, Spock displays another photograph.
Name? Khan Noonien Singh.
From 1992 through 1996, absolute ruler of more than a quarter of your world. From Asia through the Middle East.
The last of the tyrants to be overthrown.
I must confess, gentlemen, I've always held a sneaking admiration for this one.
He was the best of the tyrants, and the most dangerous.
They were Superman in a sense. Stronger, braver, certainly more ambitious, more daring.
Gentlemen, this romanticism about a ruthless dictator is...
But Spock, we humans have a streak of barbarism in us. Appalling, but there, nevertheless.
There were no massacres under his rule.
And as little freedom. No wars until he was attacked. Gentlemen.
Mr. Spock, you misunderstand us. We can be against him and admire him all at the same time.
Illogical.
Totally. This is the captain. Put a 24-hour security on Mr. Khan's quarters, effective immediately.
In his quarters, Khan, wearing a red Starfleet uniform, sits at a desk, eyes closed, hands clasped together, his index fingers pressed to the bridge of his nose. Kirk comes in and sits opposite him.
I'm sorry, Captain. I was lost in thought. My door. Locked from outside, a guard posted.
Unusual treatment for Khan, Nooni, and Singh.
Excellent. You identified me with your computer system, I imagine.
I'd like those answers now. First, the purpose of your Starflight.
A new life, a chance to build the world. Other things I doubt you would understand.
Why? Because I'm not a product of controlled genetics?
Captain, although your abilities intrigue me, you are quite honestly inferior, mentally, physically. In fact, I am surprised how little improvement there has been in human evolution. Oh, there has been technical advancement, but how little man himself has changed. Yes, it appears we will do well in your century, Captain.
Do you have any other questions?
Thank you. They've all been answered.
Man and Superman lock eyes for a moment. Then Kirk turns on his heel and leaves. An armed guard takes up position outside Khan's quarters. Inside, Khan gets up from his desk, goes to the door, and listens. He puts his hands together as if in prayer, concentrating intently, breathes in, and brings his hands down in a sweeping motion. Getting his fingertips around the sliding door, he pulls it open and knocks the guard flying. In the transporter room, MacGyver points a phaser at the technician.
Move away.
She takes his place at the control desk as the technician slowly backs away towards the doors. Khan comes in behind him and squeezes the pressure points on his neck, knocking him out. He takes his phaser and leaps onto one of the pads of the transporter as MacGyver sets the controls. Later on board the Botany Bay, Khan's people are doing yoga exercises. Khan and the men are wearing red jumpsuits. The women wear gold chainmail body stockings.
Arthur. Joaquin. Trip is over. The battle begins again. Only this time is not the world will win. It's the universe. Copy.
On the bridge of the Enterprise, Spinelli is at the helm.
On course, sir. Warp factor 2.
Maintain.
Bridge.
Captain, security here. Khan's escaped.
Sound security alert.
Security alert here. Communication channels are jammed, Captain.
Excellent. Kirk leaps out of the captain's chair and goes to the lift doors. They don't open.
Turbo elevators inoperative. Jammed, Captain.
Kirk dashes across the bridge and pulls a blue-shirted crew member away from the engineering subsystems. He flicks some switches.
Atmospheric controls cut off.
Spock leaves his console and joins Kirk. He, too, urgently flicks switches.
Useless. They're on override or engineering.
Engineering. Scotty, it's the bridge.
Captain!
Khan's men knock Scotty out.
What's going on down there?
He's not able to answer you at the moment, Captain.
Your ship is mine. I have shut off the life support system to your bridge, jammed up your exit routes. I am willing to negotiate.
Flood all decks with neural gas.
Impossible. Intruder control systems inoperative. Mr. Khan was very thorough in his study of our tech manuals.
Kirk calls to Uhura as he goes to his chair.
Contact Starbase 12.
All channels are totally jammed, Captain.
Brilliant. Every contingency anticipated.
Your air should be getting quite thin by now.
Will you surrender the bridge?
Negative.
Academic, Captain. Refuse and every person on the bridge will suffocate.
Stardate 3142.8. They have my ship, discarding their own worthless vessel. Only moments of air left on the bridge now.
Most of the bridge crew are unconscious.
Commendations recommended for Lieutenant Uhura, Technicians First Class Thule, and Harrison. Lieutenant Spinelli. And of course, Mr. Spock.
I take full responsibility.
Later, Khan's men guard the revived bridge crew.
Nothing ever changes, except man.
Your technical accomplishments?
Improve a mechanical device and you may double productivity, but improve man and you gain a thousandfold. I am such a man. Join me. I'll treat you well. I need your training to operate a vessel this complex.
Where is Captain Kirk?
I see now I made one serious error. You are the communications officer. Engage the viewing screen, please.
Uhura makes no attempt to move from her seat between Scotty and McCoy. Khan looks at Yerkin and motions towards Uhura. Yerkin grabs her and throws her into a chair opposite a computer. She stares at him defiantly. He strikes her across the face, but she remains defiant. He rears back to strike her again.
No!
MacGyver marches forward and glares at Yerkin. She gently pushes Uhura back into the seat opposite the computer.
I should have realized that suffocating together on the bridge would create heroic camaraderie among you. But it is quite a different thing to sit by and watch it happening to someone else. Engage the viewing screen. I'm sure you recognize your medical decompression chamber here, Doctor. And the meaning of that indicator.
On the view screen, they see a panel of lights and a gauge outside the decompression chamber. The light marked vacuum is illuminated. There's a small round window in the door of the decompression chamber. Inside is Kirk, his arms outstretched, struggling for breath.
Your captain will die.
The gauge plummets towards zero. MacGyver's looks uncomfortable. A female crew member covers her face and looks away as Kirk gets weaker.
If you join me, Mr. Spock, I will save his life. My vessel was useless. I need you and yours to select a colony planet, one with a population willing to be led by us.
To be conquered by you. A starship would make that most simple, wouldn't it?
Each of you, in turn, will go in there. Die while the others watch.
Khan, there's no reason I must watch this, is there?
He shakes his head.
But I hoped you would be stronger. If any one of you joins me, anyone, I'll let him live.
McCoy, Scotty, Spock, and Spinelli stare impassively.
It's so useless!
We've lost the channel.
The screen's gone dead. Yerkin threatens Uhura.
How do I regain picture?
It does not matter. The captain is dead. Take Mr. Spock next.
One of Khan's men motions with his phaser, and Spock calmly gets up and leaves the room. MacGyver's, her hands behind her back, comes through the sickbay up to one of Khan's men, who's standing guard outside the decompression chamber.
Khan said to watch him very closely. He may decide to cooperate.
The man turns away to look through the window in the door of the decompression chamber. She injects him in the arm with a hypo spray, and he falls to the floor, unconscious. MacGyver's presses a button on the control panel and floods the decompression chamber with oxygen. Slowly, the gauges start to rise. She presses another button and the two vault-like doors open. Kirk is on his hands and knees. She helps him out of the chamber.
Captain, I've saved your life. Now please don't kill him.
Kirk takes a phaser from the unconscious man, then hides beside a doorway as he hears Spock and his guard approaching. Kirk pounces on the guard, and Spock knocks him out with a Vulcan nerve pinch.
Surprised to see you, Captain, though pleased.
I'm a little pleased myself. Situation.
Khan is holding our staff in the briefing room. His men have control of the ship.
Our only chance is the intruder control circuit, although he's cut it off at the bridge.
There's a relay junction down the corridor.
Gas all decks but this one.
In the briefing room...
Armory, this is Khan. Report. Rodriguez! Lin! McPherson! Anyone, report status!
Gas starts pouring through a vent. Khan covers his mouth and flees. Scotty overpowers his guard with a swift punch, then runs out of the room. Everyone else succumbs to the effect of the gas, falling like skittles. In the corridor, Kirk runs up to Scotty, who's choking.
Where's Khan?
I don't know. He got out just as the gas...
Kirk here.
Anesthesia gas in all sections except engineering. Someone just closed that line.
Khan's at the main console in engineering, listening to the intercom.
Captain, acknowledge. Unable to flood engineering section. I suspect...
This is Scott. Captain's headed for the engineering section. I'll follow in case...
Negative. We must retake the vessel while the anesthesia lasts. Meet me in the armory. I'm blowing it clear first. Spock out.
Khan, waiting behind the door for Kirk as he comes bounding in, brandishing a phaser, grabs the captain's wrist and snatches the weapon from him. He twists and crushes the phaser in his bare hands, drops it to the floor, and glowers at Kirk. Kirk makes a move for the control console, but Khan blocks his path.
I understood your manuals. That's an overloading progress. Your ship flares up like an exploding sun within minutes.
Kirk lunges at the controls, but Khan grabs him and throws him across the floor. Kirk launches himself at Khan with a flying kick to the chest. Khan throws Kirk against a panel, then moves in with his fists. Kirk ducks out of the way and attacks Khan, who throws him off with ease. Clinging to the safety fence shielding the power conduits, Kirk wraps his legs around Khan's neck, and they tumble to the floor. Kirk body flips Khan, then hits him with a flurry of punches. Khan picks Kirk up and tosses him onto the bank of control panels.
I have five times your strength. You're no match for me.
Kirk pulls a metal rod out of the control panel and clubs Khan to the floor with it. He beats him unconscious. Dashing to the bleeping control panels, Kirk hits a sequence of buttons. He leans exhaustedly over the console.
Captain's log, stardate 3143.3. Control of the Enterprise has been regained. I wish my next decisions were no more difficult. Khan and his people, what a waste to put them in a reorientation center. And what do I do about MacGyver's?
Record tapes engaged and ready, Captain.
This hearing is now in session. Under the authority vested in me by Starfleet Command, I declare all charges and specifications in this matter have been dropped.
Jim, agreed you have the authority.
Mr. Spock, I believe our heading takes us near the Sete Alpha star system.
Quite correct, Captain. Planet number 5 there is habitable, although a bit savage, somewhat inhospitable.
But no more than Australia's Botany Bay colony was at the beginning. Those men went on to tame a continent, Mr. Khan. Can you tame a world?
Have you ever read Milton, Captain?
Yes. I understand. Lieutenant Marla McGavers. Given a choice of court-martial or accompanying them there,
MacGyvers looks at Khan.
It will be difficult. A struggle at first, even to stay alive, to find food.
I'll go with him, sir.
A superior woman. I will take her. And I've gotten something else I wanted. A world to win, an empire to build.
Kirk looks at Khan and nods faintly. Khan stares back, imperious.
This hearing is closed.
MacGyvers and Khan get up from their seats, facing a panel comprised of Scotty, Spock, Kirk and McCoy wearing dress tunics. They're escorted out by 3 security crew.
It's a shame for a good Scotsman to admit it, but I'm not up on Milton.
The statement Lucifer made when he fell into the pit. It is better to rule in hell than serve in heaven.
Would be interesting, Captain, to return to that world in 100 years and learn what crop had sprung from the seed you planted today.
Yes, Mr. Spock. It would indeed.
The 4 men get up and leave, and the Enterprise continues on its journey. This audio description was written and produced at IMS. For the Sci-Fi Channel.